are residents, do you think they're ever overstimulated by the environment? And what might they do? Help me, help me, help me. Or how about the resident that keeps trying to go down the fire door? Y'all have those? I want out too sometimes. I have common sense to use the right stairwell. But if I was cognitively impaired, I may not use the right stairwell. We need to think about these behaviors that our residents demonstrate and how the environment might impact on this. How many of you have gotten up during the course of the morning and gone to the ladies' room or men's room? You don't have to raise your hand. You've gone when you needed to go. But what if you couldn't? What if you needed to use the ladies' room or the men's room and you couldn't get there by yourself? What might you do? Call for help. Have the wicked fidgets. Try to get up. Would any of you, if you were this cognitively impaired resident, grab at all the nurses walking by? You might grab at somebody, wouldn't you? You can't touch the staff. Bad, 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 because then we have to medicate you. Have we done anything about the residents' need to go to the bathroom? No, we have not. Now, I'm a thrower. Personally, I would probably be throwing things to get somebody's attention. Yeah, well, you're not allowed to throw things in long-term care either unless you're down in therapy and you're playing ball. Because then, once again, it's bad behavior. And bad behavior we treat with medication. We need to look at more global assessments. Internal stimulus. Does he need to use the bathroom? Is he hungry? Is he tired? Is he uncomfortable? I've seen several of you pour yourself a glass of water. I've seen you go out to refill your coffee cup because we're able. But our residents aren't all able to do this. And so we need to look at what are the behaviors we're seeing and what are our residents really trying to tell us. When we talk specifically about pain assessments, we ideally would like to know the location of the pain. Do we always know that? No. And when we talk about location, we need to talk about location or locations. For example, you're doing an admission assessment on a resident, and they're admitted because their status post-fractured hip. So we're going to look at their hip pain, right? Might they not also have chronic back pain, osteoarthritis of the knees, and trigeminal neuralgia? So we need to look at location or locations. Intensity. Ideally, we'd like to know if it's mild, moderate, or severe. We don't always know. And so we're going to talk a little while about what we do about evaluating intensity. Quality of the pain. In the ideal world, I'd like to know if the pain is sharp, dull, achy, burning, because the more I know about the quality of the pain, the more I know about the etiology of the pain. I'll give you a little bit of a hint. If somebody talks about a sharp, shooting, lancinating, or burning pain, it's probably neuropathic in etiology. What that means is it's coming from an abnormal processing of sensory input. It means you might need to look at some adjuvant analgesics, medications whose primary indication is for other than pain relief, but have been found effective in the treatment of certain pain syndromes. Neuropathic pains include our diabetic neuropathies, our post-stroke pain, our central nervous system mediated pain, quadriplegics and paraplegics who have pain, phantom limb pain. So we need to think about that. And typically we use antidepressants and anticonvulsants on those pains. I will give you another hint. Administrators in the room, you're going to appreciate this. Don't bother to x-ray it, CAT scan it, or MRI it because it's not going to show up. I just saved you thousands of dollars in tests. If somebody talks about a dull, aching, throbbing pain, it's probably musculoskeletal in nature. Unless it's something new, don't x-ray it, don't CAT scan it, and don't MRI it. It's not going to show up. And you know what? You can still treat it. Even without these diagnostic tests, you can treat pain. Onset, duration, rhythm, not in our elderly and not in our cognitively impaired residents. This is really nice in your young adults who are really alert and oriented. But don't go looking for history in your elderly or cognitively impaired. In your elderly residents, you're liable to find out that the pain started 30 years ago when they were married to their first husband, lived in the house with the drafty windows, and the grocery checker just made those bags way too heavy. Is this clinically useful for any of you? Do you all have time for this in your lives? If I look for history, I look in the chart. If I look for history, I generally don't go back more than 2 weeks. That's really enough for me. Manner of expressing pain. We're talking about verbalizations, vocalizations, and nonverbal signs and symptoms. And we'll talk more about that. What makes the pain better or worse? Do they only have pain at night? Do they only have pain when they ambulate? Do they only have pain when their mother-in-law visits? Analgesics don't work on mother-in-laws. What are the effects the pain has on activities of daily living and quality of life? Any other comments? Is there anything else that we want to know? Plan. What strategies has the resident used in the past to manage their pain, and how well have those strategies worked? We miss this one a lot. Tell me if this sounds familiar. Nurses, you're doing an admission assessment, and the resident tells you or the family tells you that the individual has arthritis, and they take Tylenol every day for their arthritis, but it doesn't really work. Does that happen? Okay, now I want you all to be honest with me because I do this for a living. When you call the doc for orders, what do you get for the arthritis pain? Yeah, hello? And we've just labeled that person as cognitively impaired? On that note, I think it's a good time for a break. It's 10 o'clock. I will see you all back at 10:15. Be thinking. I'll see you at 10:15. Thank you. Usable scale is this 0 to 10 scale, even in the cognitively impaired. If you think about your cognitively impaired residents, the last thing to go is the long-term memory. Well, think about how old you all were when you learned to count from 0 to 10. And so very often they can utilize this scale. You need to use simple explanations. You need to use the same explanations. There are going to be days where your cognitively impaired residents can use this scale, and there will be days that they can't. How many of you have seen the FACES scale? Sure. How many of you are using the FACES scale? We got to talk about the FACES scale. The FACES scale was originally designed for use in pediatrics. The reliability and validity data with this scale is tied to the pediatric population. Are you using this in pediatrics or geriatrics? There's no validity or reliability data to support that the tool measures what we think it's measuring. So what I'm saying, I'm not saying you can't use this tool. I'm not saying you're going to be cited by a surveyor for using this tool. I'm saying you may not be measuring what you think you're measuring. What studies have shown us is that our elderly residents and our cognitively impaired residents point to the sad, crying, frowning face because they're rating distress. They're in a nursing home, they don't like your food, and their son doesn't come to visit. Does that tell you anything about pain? You need to make sure you're measuring what you think you're measuring. So when you use a FACES scale, you need to use a really good explanation about the fact that we only want to measure pain, not distress, not unhappiness. We need to really use a very clear explanation. Are we using this tool in who? Yeah. So that's probably not going to work for you. The question is, are you measuring what you think you're measuring? And I'm telling you the reliability and validity data isn't there. I'm not saying you can't. I'm just cautioning you that you may not be measuring what you think you're measuring. What the studies have shown us, and the preponderance of studies on the cognitively impaired and pain rating scales have been done out at University of Iowa. A friend of mine, Keela Herr, is one of the chief researchers on that. Christine Kovach has also done a lot of research on cognitively impaired and pain rating scales? Unfortunately, the answer is there's no great answer yet. We're still working on it. When we go back to talking about assessment, we need to talk about when we're going to assess our residents for pain. And what I use, my policy in my facility, is pain is assessed on admission, readmission, and change of status, whether the change is physical or behavioral, and at a minimum of quarterly. Does that time frame sound familiar to anybody? Yes. MDS coordinators, that one was for you. MDS is tied to our reimbursement. Therefore, it is important if we make pain assessment equally visible and equally important, we give it the weight that it needs and deserves. However, this allows our residents to really fall through the cracks if we're only assessing it quarterly. So every shift, my nursing assistants are screening for the presence of pain. Nursing assistants are able to screen for pain. Notice the change in word from screen to assess, and assess to screen. We know because of scope of practice, our nursing assistants can't assess, but they are able to ask the resident, are you having any pain or discomfort? On a scale of 0 to 10, what is it? They need to know when to report to the licensed nurse. And my nursing assistants know that our standard in our facility, our policy reads, any new report of pain must be reported to the licensed nurse. Any pain rating of 4 or greater on a 0 to 10 pain scale must be reported to the licensed nurse. Any report of pain of moderate or above on a mild, moderate, severe scale must be reported to the licensed nurse, and there must be a licensed nursing assessment of that pain. We need to use simple pain questions. If I were to interview one of you about your pain, it would be quite different than the interview I would do with one of my cognitively impaired residents. What we want to really focus on using is simple pain questions. Are you having any pain right now? Focus on in the moment. If you ask, have you ever had any pain? Did you have any pain last week? They're not going to be able to identify it. Focus on in the moment. Make it concrete. Are you having any discomfort, soreness, achiness? Any unpleasant sensations? And why did I use all of these different words for pain? Because that's what it is. Because it may not trigger for one individual if I just ask about pain. One of the things that I find, particularly in my elderly residents, is pain is seen as acute. Pain is what happens when they fall and land on their butt, when their belly hurts because they're constipated, or because when they get a skin tear. The nagging ache in their back, the stiffness in their knees, the tightness in their joints isn't perceived of as pain. And so we need to use a variety of words to make sure we get all of the information. In a cognitively impaired resident, the word pain may not mean anything, but soreness might, or discomfort might. Can you point to where you feel the pain? Show me. How many of you walk into a resident's room with a nice little pain assessment form that has a little two-dimensional figure drawn on it and say, show me on this picture where you have pain? How many of you do that? Oh, we all do that. Come on. No? Good, I'm impressed. Because I have to tell you, your cognitively impaired residents aren't going to be able to transfer that little two-dimensional picture to themselves. So you need to ask them on themselves, show me where your pain is. If the resident tells you, my arm hurts, well, my arms aren't that long, but it could be down here, it could be up here, it could be over here. Show me, point to where the pain is, and have them show you on themselves. Does it hurt when you walk? Does it hurt when you sit? Does it hurt when you stand? If you want to know if it hurts when they sit, ask them when they're sitting. Don't ask them when they're lying in bed. If you want to know if it hurts when they walk, ask them when they're walking. They may not have the recall to say, yes, last night when I was in bed, I do remember that my back hurt. Or I remember yesterday when I sat in the pink chair, yeah, I was a little uncomfortable when you moved me to the green chair, I was much better. You're not going to get that kind of information. And so you need to act in the moment, particularly with your cognitively impaired residents. Is there anything that makes the pain go away? You're standing up right now and you tell me your legs hurt. Let's sit down. Do your legs still hurt? Is it better? You need to make it concrete. When you ask about lying, ask when they're lying. When you ask about sitting, ask when they're sitting. That's the only way you're going to get accurate information. When we assess our cognitively impaired residents, the first thing we want to look at is pathology or diagnosis. Is there a reason to believe this individual could have pain? Or is this one of the mysteries of life where the Alzheimer's disease cured the osteoarthritis, spinal stenosis, and degenerative joint disease? Is there a diagnosis or reason to believe the individual could have pain? Ultimately, you're going to make a pain rating guess. Do you think the pain is mild, moderate, or severe? And again, we'll talk more specifically how we deal with that shortly. What are the behaviors we see that might be indicative of pain? What are the changes in behaviors or activities of daily living? What are the nonverbal signs or symptoms of discomfort? We talked about Ken this morning. Refusing to eat, refusing to ambulate, only picking at his food, beating up his caregivers. We need to document that, those nonverbal signs and symptoms, and look at, could they be the etiology of pain? What does he have in his diagnoses? Is there something that makes me think he could be uncomfortable? We need to look at those nonspecific signs and symptoms. Frowning, grimacing, fearful expressions, grinding of teeth. How many of you have teeth grinders in your facility? Oh, those teeth grinders, aren't they awful? And that's a dental problem, right? We send them to the dentist. But I've been doing some research recently, and it's been informal, but I've been looking at some of those teeth grinders. And I'll tell you a little bit of a story and sort of how this came about. I have a resident who is severely cognitively impaired in my facility. Actually, I have several of them, but this one particular resident is a teeth grinder. And he grinds and he grinds and he grinds and he grinds and he grinds. And I don't know how this man has any teeth left. And one day it was particularly bad. It was grating on my nerves. And yeah, I can be intolerant sometimes. But I said, you know what? I need to see what's going on with this guy. We'd sent him to the dentist and the dentist just said, you know, he's a teeth grinder. And I grabbed his orderly and I said, come take a look with me. And we ranged his joints and we looked at him and nothing happened. And I turned him over on his side. He was lying in bed. The orderly was holding him over on his side for me. And I sort of ran my hand down his spine. And I got to his lower back and he pulled away and he grabbed at the side rail and he went to hit me. Anybody know what I found? Compression fractures. The gentleman has compression fractures. We treated the pain, and you know what? He's still grinding his teeth. But it's a lot less. It's a lot less than it was. And it seems to be tied to that. So some of the teeth grinding might be a habit. But we have been treating the pain, and the teeth grinding now is really very occasional. It is significantly reduced. And I'm seeing that more in my cognitively impaired residents. So look at that teeth grinding. Bracing, guarding, rubbing. Fidgeting and restlessness. Fidgeting and restlessness is not just cognitive impairment. It's not just wandering. It's not just Alzheimer's. I have a colleague who's been doing a number of studies on what she calls exiting behavior. She's looking at cognitively impaired residents and the attempt to elope, the increase in wandering, the increase in pacing. And she's called it exiting behavior, a resident trying to escape their pain, walk away from discomfort. And we're looking at analgesic use and whether or not it's reducing this behavior. And you know what? It is. Striking out, increasing a recurrent agitation. Why is Ken hitting his caregivers? Does he only try to hit the caregivers when they go to bathe him? Well, maybe it's uncomfortable. Maybe he's got contractures. Maybe he's got arthritis. Maybe those joints are stiff. So we need to look at why they're striking out, what the reason is. Oh, how do we treat individuals who beat up their caregivers during CARES? What do? Send in two caregivers. Well, that makes it better, doesn't it? Why are they striking out? Why are they resisting CARES? Eating or sleeping poorly. Sighing, groaning, crying. Change in breathing pattern even can be a sign of unrelieved pain. Decrease in activities level. Resisting certain movements during CARES, range of motion. Suppose you have a resident who every time you try to put the shirt on goes to hit. Is it that they don't like the shirt and they want to be naked? Is it you picked a red shirt and they really wanted the blue? Or is it the act of putting their arm through a sleeve is uncomfortable and the only way they can tell you is to push you away? Change in gait or behavior. Loss of function. All of these are nonverbal and nonspecific signs that we need to look at as possibly being indicative of unrelieved or inadequately controlled pain in our cognitively impaired residents. We need to do some detective work. We need to look beyond the behaviors to what the etiology of the behaviors actually is. This is Luigi. Luigi is cognitively impaired. And when I first met Luigi, it was late in the day, and I was at that facility. I was there late into the evening, and the first night Luigi was in this facility, he was yelling, "Doloro, Doloro, Doloro." I called his daughter, and I said, "He's calling for Dolores." She said, "Dolores? I don't know anybody named Dolores." She came in to visit, and she said, and Luigi said to his daughter, "Doloro, Doloro." She looked at me, and she said, "Jill, Doloro means pain in Italian." I'm a nice Jewish girl from Long Island. How would I know that? But I will tell you, I have changed every pain assessment tool I've ever worked on to now include, is there a specific word that a resident might use in English or in some other language that I should be aware of? If somebody's primary language is Spanish, find out what the word for pain in Spanish is. If it's Slovakian, find out what the word for pain is in Slovakian. And document it so that when you hear it, you know. And of course, we document that on the care plan. So now we found that out on evenings. But, you know, we went through a lot of effort to find that out on the evening staff. Nights has to figure it out for themselves, and that day staff, well, they have way more resources than we do. So they really have to find out on their own, don't they? Does this happen in your facility? Yes, we need to communicate this. This belongs in the resident care plan. If you're care planning for pain, it belongs in their assessment. If you're not care planning for pain, this is Rose. Rose is another severely cognitively impaired resident that I met recently. When I first met Rose, she was sitting in this big comfortable chair in her room with her arms folded over her head like this. And she looked really comfortable sitting in this big chair. Does anybody know what that arm folded over the head thing is? I have no idea either. And I asked the staff, and they didn't know what it was. And I met the daughter, and the daughter said, "I have no idea. Mom just sits like that once in a while." The son came in to visit from California, and I happened to be in this facility for several days, and I met the son. And it was really bothering me, Rose, sitting like that. And I said, "Do you know what that is?" And he said, "No." They went back to California, and he had called me the next day in my office, back in my facility, and he said to me, "You know, I was thinking about this. I can remember when I was a kid, Mom sometimes would get migraines, and I'd come home from school, and she'd be sitting in her favorite chair with her arms folded over her head." This is now all over the care plan. When we see Rose with her arms folded over her head, we treat her for headache. And you know what? We see it a lot less, and when we do treat her for that headache, we see that she is no longer sitting with her arms folded over her head. It's in the care plan, so days knows, evenings knows, and guess what? Even the night shift knows. And here's a biggie. If there's agency staff in the facility, because we really can't share these secrets with agency staff, right? Because they're just agency staff. And we have to guard these secrets. Why exactly? I have no idea. But we put this in the care plan. So if Rose has an agency nurse, they know that she needs medication for headache. We need to assess patient function. We need to focus on function. Management of pain requires a comprehensive assessment, and part of that is, how is the pain affecting function? Very often when we see stoic individuals who don't want to report pain, the way that we find out about the pain is a decrease in that function. And so we need to look at this as part of our assessment process. Through a caregiver's eyes. I first used this slide at the American College of Healthcare Administrators Conference in Orlando 2 years ago. And it's since become one of my absolute favorite slides, because you can use this with all of your staff, whether they're nursing assistants, administrators, physical or occupational therapists, social workers, recreation staff, or nurses. What do you see? What's different? What caused it? What was done about it? And whatever you did it work? Nurses, it sounds a little like nursing process, doesn't it? Yeah, but it empowers all of our staff and enables them to look at our residents and tell us what they're seeing so we can communicate that, so we can address the issues. This is not just a nursing domain. Remember, we talked that pain is a systems requirement. And we need to make a commitment to that on a systems level. We need to use that team approach. We need the input from REC as to what they're seeing, the input from social service and dietary. What are they seeing in this resident? Let nursing know. Nursing, communicate with the doc. And let's see what's going on with these residents. And now that we've put into place a plan to manage that pain or manage what we're seeing, how well is the plan working? A lot of times the feedback you're going to get is going to be from REC or going to be from physical therapy or even be from dietary. Are they now able to sit through a meal? Are they doing better in the dining room? Are they eating more? Have we seen a weight gain? This is Mrs. H. Mrs. H is 94 years old. She's alert and oriented, a little forgetful. She is one of those residents that truly believes that pain is a normal consequence of aging. I've known Mrs. H for 9 years. Mrs. H greets me on a daily basis with 0 to 10, 0 to 10, 0 to 10. If I didn't know better, I'd think she thought it was my name. The highlight of her day is her ambulation, and she struts up and down the halls walking 200 to 300 feet 3 times a day. Recently, she stopped and was only walking bed to bath. Is it because she's 94 years old? Is this an unavoidable decline? We need to assess. We need to find out. So how would you assess Mrs. H? What would you look for? What would you ask her? What would you do? She's in your facility. What would you all do with her? Take her for a walk, and she says it hurts. Everywhere. I'm 94. Okay, somebody's asking, did she fall? She didn't fall. She didn't fall. Somebody asked if it's one place more than other. I'm 94. I hurt everywhere. Now what are you going to do with her? Has it increased? Yes, I'm a day older than I was yesterday. Do an assessment. What are you going to assess? How are you going to assess her? Is she guarding? Is there a change of posture? Are there nonverbal signs that you're seeing? What else? What's that? Joint mobility. Joint mobility is actually the answer in this particular question. What I did in Mrs. H's case is I grabbed one of my physical therapists. I like to have a second set of eyes. And I said, come with me. And we ranged each joint. We got to her left hip, and she stiffened up, and she pulled away, and her facial expressions changed. This was something new for her, so I did get an X-ray, found a severely degenerated left hip joint. Now, granted, this didn't happen overnight, but now the pain is interfering with her ambulation. So we now know what's going on with Mrs. H, and we'll talk about care planning for Mrs. H in a few minutes. This is Rita. Rita has severe Alzheimer's disease. She is severely cognitively impaired. She is completely nonverbal. She does not speak at all. She is still ambulatory, and she loves to dance. Any kind of music, she's up and dancing. You should see her dance to reggae. Let's not even go into why they're playing reggae. We won't go there. Anyway, recently she stopped, and she wasn't dancing anymore. Is it because she's severely cognitively impaired? Does it matter? I mean, we're talking about dancing here. Does it matter? Why does it matter? Quality of life. This is quality of life for Rita. Isn't that why we do what we do? Let me digress for a second. Let me ask you all a question. How many of you went into healthcare for the money? Two people. Okay. All right. Let me try this one. Let me try something else. How many of you went into it for the hours so we could work Christmas and New Year's? I got one taker on that one. So why do we do what we do? Because we're people.